Okay, hello everybody and welcome to Investing with IBD. I'm Arusha Pierce, your host, and this is a bonus podcast episode, a holiday edition. We have Jim Ropel here in the studio. It's still December 11th, but we ran out of time for our regular segment and we wanted to add a special episode that we like to call War Stories with Jim Ropel. So we're going to go over a number of really cool stories that Jim has had over his 30-year career, and hopefully these will be they're going to be a lot of great lessons for all of us to take from them. So Jim, let's start off with your upbringing, because you had a tough upbringing, and there are obviously a lot of lessons that we can all learn from this.
Everything was great. You know, I had great parents. We were poor, like we weren't on food stamps or anything, but we didn't have any money. Uh-huh. And we grew up in a town that has a lot of kind of hidden deep wealth in it. And that was a defining moment for me, because I was poor or broke. I couldn't buy nice clothes, and I had friends who would, this is 30 years ago, they'd spend $1,000 without even asking their parents.
Wow.
And I said, you know, that really built a fire in me. I said, I really want that. And to give you an example, like my dad bought his first house for $7,000.
Oh my God.
And so right around third grade, the whole world kind of shifted under my feet, because I realized these kids are reading and doing math, and I was just looking at it like it was Chinese. And they realized I had dyslexia, and I was also, I'm about 5 feet tall, I'm a dwarf, and I was a super easy target for being in these LD classes, and I was bullied a lot. I mean, I wouldn't say I didn't get beat up every day, but I got pushed around a lot and uh-huh. picked on. And so the two defining moments, well, my parents got divorced also. And so the defining things when I was young was people who had a lot of money and I had none, and being dyslexic and being bullied. So it kind of made me work very hard. I literally would shovel four driveways on snowy days before school.
Wow.
And I was always a very hard worker. And I think that seeing what money could buy and what other people had built a fire in me. So I don't think raising children with a lot of money is a good idea. And so those are, my mother was my like savior. She, every night when I would go to bed, she knew I was struggling deeply. And she asked me every night, tell me three bad things that happened today and three good. And she got me through all that.
Wow.
I mean, my mom is the reason that I am where I am today. But things got a lot better, and I overcame my dyslexic issues, and I went to college, and I met two really great guys. One of them's dad was a stockbroker, and the other one had inherited a bunch of money and was in the market. And the three of us just dove into the market, and then the crash of 87 happened, and I was just hooked, I mean captivated. And I went on my first interview right out of college, the very first one, they hired me as a cold call stock jockey. But the problem was I had no idea what I was doing, zero. And I would spend all this time building big positions in stocks, and then they would blow up in my face. I mean, this is about biotech. I built a big position in a stock called Centocor. I mean, I spent like 9 months cold calling, opening accounts. It's very hard to do. And they had a drug called Centoxin, which was, it cured septicemia. The FDA approves it. And then in the boomerang oddball of all things, they rescind their approval.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I was buying it at $18 to $30. It goes to $60. They pull the FDA approval and the stock implodes to back to like 18. And it went there in like a couple days.
Yeah.
So earnings matter, really matter. And so I blew up my book many times, but then I found the system. I found the paper, then the book, and I kept studying and reading and cutting losses, and I really started to get success from it. And my business really started to grow as I started to make money. The problem was, as all my customers were making money over time, I started to realize that the brokerage firm was not our friend. And I'm not really going to go into why, but I realized that it was rigged against the customer. They were only interested in making money, and I could make a lot more money running a hedge fund. So I left, and I started to get kind of closer to Bill back then. Well, I was a customer, and Bill and I would talk on the phone a bunch. And I got so fortunate that Bill really took a lot of time with me. And I would send him FedEx packages, and he would handwrite on these notes. I mean, I brought some of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And he would just write out pages. Six, I just showed you five pages. There's just one.
It's incredible.
And so I was very fortunate that Bill spent time with me and he helped me hone, and another guy named Lee Freestone, who mm-hmm. used to work here. Lee and I became friends and he spent time with me. And so that's kind of the story.
Yeah, and it's interesting. A few other things you've told me is that, you know, you were cutting your losses and you knew that one day you're going to stumble onto a monster, right? One day you're going to find yourself in one of those great stocks.
It's kind of like if you want to be a big wave surfer, you have to get off the beach and get in that water. And you have to have the wave curl over on you and curl over. But if you cut those losses and you're doing everything right, one day that wave, you're going to catch it and it's going to be a monster. And I was literally sitting at my dad's desk in his office and I was writing down what I paid, what I cut the loss. And over, and I go, you know, one of these days I'm going to catch a monster.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they all came.
Yeah, and you will make, you also realize that you will make money over time if you take the time to learn the system and keep going too. And really do things that no one else wants to do.
Absolutely, time. I mean, over long stretches of time. I mean, my wife literally said, the first several years of me as a retail broker, I lost money every year. My wife's like, you are in the wrong business, full blown. I want you to quit and get a different industry.
Yeah.
Go be a lawyer, sell insurance or something. And she was probably right. I mean, the tax returns were a disaster, but I was not giving up. I mean, I read a book called A Random Walk Down Wall Street, and I took it. It was like a quest to prove it wrong. I knew that was crap.
Yeah.
Well, it's crap for people who won't apply themselves and do all the right things. But I'm sorry, it's crap for people who will do all the right things.
Yeah.
So.
And so in the end, with your upbringing, all the kind of the odds against you, you know, you're proof that you can make it if you put enough time and effort.
I'll just tell you, I mean, my grades were not really good. They were bad. They were horrible. I couldn't read and do math in eighth grade. They just pushed me along. Mm-hmm. Now in college, I got a lot better by my senior year. But, you know, like the only class I did great in college was like economics because I was fascinated by it. So being a great student is not that relevant to making money in the stock market. But having great discipline over long, long stretches certainly is.
Awesome. So let's go to the next story. And what we'll call this story, Three Amigos. And this is about some analysts who made a prediction about a few stocks that were gonna, I think they were predicting it was gonna, they're gonna go to zero or they weren't gonna do very well.
Yeah, I was working in a large wirehouse at the time and I had built a really big position in eBay. And I come into work one morning and the well-known analyst on CNBC all the time comes out with a report and it's called The Three Amigos. And it was eBay, Amazon, and Yahoo. And she's like, it was a 10-page report with 30,000 reasons why these stocks were going down. They were overvalued. There's 1,000 reasons. And again, they rattled all the stocks. They rattled the whole sector. But the charts were speaking to me. I couldn't imagine all that accumulation just going away immediately. So the report is right here. And it's dated May 1st, 2003. And eBay went split adjusted from 9 to 25 and about a year and a half.
And eBay was Bill's biggest position at that point too.
Yeah, and I mean, when you looked at eBay, if there's 30 variables in a CanSlim template stock, it had 29. You could lose money, but you're just, if you buy stocks that have 29 variables out of 30 over time, you have an edge, a significant edge. And I knew I had it. And it went from 9 to 25, split adjusted. Amazon went from 22 to 60. It's a 200% gain. I don't have the stats on Yahoo, but again, it went way up.
Oh, yeah. It did really well.
So
at that time.
Analysts, they don't have any skin in the game.
Yeah.
And so the Three Amigos happen to be the three good amigos. So yeah. Don't pay attention to analysts. They don't have any skin in the game.
Right. And also, it's, you know, the market's always right. If you learn how to read charts, you learn how to analyze the way we do here. You're going to find yourself in the best stocks because you're actually following the real action or the buying action of the smartest people in the room, and they're slowly acquiring these great stocks at the right time.
Absolutely, and you will get, you're absolutely going to get downgrades in leading stocks because valuation people want to rattle them down, but I think Bill said 3 hours to 3 days, a downgrade that's not worthy of its, if it's an uncredible report, the institutions are going to come in. Yeah. And that's why it's really important to have great institutional support. A lot of these stocks, trading in the first 30 minutes of the day has got to be the worst thing you can do.
Yep.
I mean, there's a rare case on the gap up on earnings where having the experience to know this is a time when you have to break that rule and get in there. But most of the time, you'll have Maria Bartiromo jumping up and down saying, upgrade on this. And the institutions are going to sell into that about 20 minutes later.
Yeah.
So the Three Amigos, great story, but analysts are just, take them with a grain of salt.
Okay, let's take a quick break here and we will be back in a second. Hey, Arusha here with a big announcement. We have launched a brand new interactive video broadcast called IBD Live. IBD Live takes you behind the curtain to see how professionals trade. Log on and watch live as IBD's analysts and portfolio managers follow the first hour of market action and pick winning stocks. You get to listen to our conversations, see our screens, and ask us questions all in real time. If you've ever wanted to trade alongside a team of experts, this is your chance. Go to investors.com/IBD Live and sign up to get your first 2 weeks for free. Okay, we are back with Investing with IBD and this special episode of War Stories with Jim Roepel. Let's go to the third story, and this is about ego, and this was a valuable lesson that you learned the hard way.
So I was having a really, really good year in 2011. And you do really crazy things like buy expensive cars or fly on private jets. And I love, love, love to play golf. And I rent a jet and we fly to a place called Bandon Dunes, which is Mecca for golfers. And my ego was running high and I knew we had to get there early. So we fly out before the markets open. So I'm not watching for the first hour. So we land, and I mean, the second wheels are down, I pull up my handheld. I'm like, this can't be right. I'm like, there's a glitch. So I call the trading desk and like, no, everything you have is down like 20 points. And I am like, kind of freaking out. And the driver looks at me, he goes, you look a little distressed. He goes, are you going to need your phone? I'm like, yeah. I was 150 million long, 75 million on margin. I was really long the world. He goes, there's a snag. We had a huge storm at the golf course last night up on the hill. And he goes, there's no cell service. And I'm looking at this and I'm freaking out. And I looked at all the charts really quick and I made a snap decision. I sold $50 million worth of stock on the spot. So we get to the course, play golf, and I'm with my three best friends at Mecca. I can't hit a golf ball. I can't do anything. I'm walking down the fairway with the handheld, ruined my whole day. And at that point, this might have been my biggest loss. I think I lost $4 million that day. Mm-hmm. So we finish golf. All my buddies go off into the bar. They're having a great time. I go into the clubhouse and I go to one of their computers and I download Wanda. And I fire it up and I spend about 2 hours in there. And I'm like, well, it's just a disastrous day, it was a charity event. I was going to make a contribution. So again, my ego was just raging, but I go back to the bar and have a drink and I'm like, it was a bad day, but tomorrow will be better. It's not that big of a deal. The next day, I think it might've been Acme Packet, I think.
Oh, okay.
Acme Packet misses. And I'll leave it at this. The next day I lost like 6 million or whatever it was day one. I lost 30% more the next day. It was just, and I'm thinking in hindsight, I'm like, what was going on? I fly leaving the market naked on the open. I'm in a private jet.
Yeah.
I mean, all these crazy things happen after you. And by the way, I was up way up that year and I ended up having a mediocre year. So when you're doing things like extravagant things, you're feeling overly confident, you're going to get pummeled. So, and especially when your driver says, do you need your phone? And you're not going to have it all day. That just was like, I think it went like white, like Casper the Ghost.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go into SDLI. This was a really interesting story about patterns repeating.
Yeah, this is, in, early or mid 2000. I think the market had already peaked because I was reviewing this the other night. And I was like, it's really odd that this stock roared. I think the market had peaked before, but the pattern to me in SDLI looked very much like Broadcom, which had up to that point been my largest gain. And I said, oh, this is going to be great. So I buy some around 200. And I remember I was playing golf about 3 days later after the market closed, and I got stopped out of it. I was so disgusted. I walked off after nine and I was just frustrated. But the stock turned around about 5 or 6 days later, crossed the high by 1,000. It crosses the next high by another 1,000, and then the third high. So it's three, looks like a stair step down.
Okay.
I'm long and this stock roars from 200 to like exactly 320. And so I remember I was in my old house and I'm in bed and I wake up and I look at the pre-market, I pull the covers, I look at the tape, and I'm like, it's down 70 points. And I just took the covers, pulled them over my head, and I'm like, I just lost, like, you know, big money.
Yeah.
So I'm hiding under the covers for a few minutes. I pull the covers back up, and I look, and I'm like, it's not down 60, it's up like 100. Or it was up like 80, because JDS Uniphase made a bid for it.
Wow.
And so it it wasn't down, it was up, so it's trading around 320, and it on the takeover, it wasn't a cash deal, it was a stock deal, and Uniphase then blew off and it roars to 480, and just this whole thing happened in like a month. So I went from walking off a golf course, got to get stopped out,
right,
to freaking out thinking I took a giant loss to having one of the biggest gains I'd ever had.
Yeah, once you got stopped out, once it started doing something better, you started to get back into the stock though too.
Yeah, the memory of Broadcom was so fresh in my mind. The pattern looked really similar. Mm-hmm. And again, earnings were up triple digits the prior three quarters. It had a chip that had to be had for fiber optic multiplexers, which there was a bandwidth shortage at that time.
Okay.
And it all lined up. But I just found that when you wake up in the morning and think you'd lost a huge amount of money, and actually you'd made a huge amount of money, is something to not wake up to and then wake up
to. Yeah, no, I mean, that was a good case scenario right there of things turning around. Now, let's talk about Enzo Biochem and a mayor that you were talking with.
Okay, this was a thinner stock back in, again, I think it's right around 2000. And there was the mayor of this little town called Lake Forest was a broker in our office, and he specialized in biotech. And I see Enzo make like a perfect cup and handle, and I buy a bunch of it. He's like, hey, welcome to the club, man. This is the greatest stock in the world. And it has a great pattern in it. It was an exceptional blow off, and I can't remember exactly where I bought it, but it went up like a couple 100% in a very brief period. And so one morning I walk in and it gaps open and call it 20 points or more. And all of a sudden I'm watching it, and next thing you know, it's up 5, and then it's even. And next thing you know, it's like down 5 or 10. So I literally called the floor. I said, sell everything I have in one big block. And the guy freaks out. He's like, there's no buyers at all. And then they halted the stock. Mm-hmm. And they reopen, they blow all my stock out, and it's down like, I think it was down 18 points down.
Wow.
And the mayor in the back office comes running down the hallway. He's like, you idiot, they have a cure for AIDS. He literally's like, it's going to go to 1,000.
Yeah.
You can't sell. I'm like, I go, I don't know whether they have a cure for AIDS or not, but the market doesn't think so. He's like, this is the biggest winning stock. This is going to change your life. And as far as I know, he still has it, and it's gone, I think, it's certainly to the single digits, if it's not even around anymore. But it's kind of hard having somebody go, they have a cure for AIDS.
Yeah.
And the stock is just made you so much money. You've got that intoxication feeling. But it was only at about, say I was buying it in 30, 40, 50, 60. It was 150 or more. And when someone says, it's going to go to 1,000.
Right.
Do the math.
Right, I know, yeah.
And you've got to sell.
Yep.
Because it's reversed.
Yeah.
So that's the story of the mayor.
It is a good lesson, though, to regardless of what people say and what stories are promised, you have to listen to the market and listen to what the stock is doing, because clearly the market didn't agree that it had the cure.
Well, they didn't have a cure for it. It was a rumor.
Right, exactly.
I mean, the market knows. The market is going to ferret out BS every time. I mean, maybe not, the market can do funny things for a few days or so. Prices can get out of whack a little bit, but the market's going to figure it out.
Right. In
always.
The, in the end, it's going to go. It's going to go to the fundamentals, whether you like it or not.
Absolutely.
So let's go to Baidu, and this was a stock that you were trading during what 2006 when it really started going.
So I'm watching Baidu. It has an IPO and it explodes up.
Right.
And it was a lot of hype, and then it just kind of went dormant. And it went, and I was very enamored with it, because there was 1.5 billion people in China,
right?
And I read that only 100 million or something like that were online, but every day 30,000 people were going online.
It's mind-boggling.
And I'm like, this is a lock. And then I find out that the Chinese government is in a battle with Google over privacy or over free speech.
Right.
So Google says, you know, do no harm. We're not going to acquiesce to you. So what does China do? They redirect every query to Google to Baidu. So now I know there's a massive total addressable market. The leading competition's blocked out. And so this stock just takes off and it goes wild. And I really, it had like many weeks in a row up, and I built a really, really big position. I think it was around $750 a share or something, and I had, and it might have gone to 1,000.
Yeah.
And I had 75,000 shares, and it splits 10 for one. And one morning they report earnings, and during the call they say, oh, by the way, we're going to completely change our whole platform from what you know now to something called Phoenix Nest. And it gapped down really big. And this was the biggest, I had 750,000, or I think I had 750,000 shares, which was just an earth shaker position.
Yeah.
And the loss on the day was, it was really big. And I, you know, it just made my stomach knot up, and I ended up selling off a bunch of it, but it turned around just, it seems like days later, and I added it all back, and it went into a phenomenal climax run. And I got out of it in many different pieces. But it was, my notes, the bottom line is you've got to have the fundamentals. When you know you've got a story where the total addressable market is enormous, the government's on your side, all these things line up. Every stock that I've had where I've done exceedingly well, I knew intimately the fundamentals, and they just seem to all line up, and they'll have these they'll act just like the prior stocks with earnings and just all the variables.
Yeah, but let's also talk about a stock that's gapping down on you, right? And it's starting to cross a threshold that where there's you're taking on a lot more risk. That there's a point where you can't freeze, right? You have to act.
Well, what if it did blow up? Like I had so much, it could have ended me.
Yeah,
That was a monster position, and I had to sell some. You cannot freeze. But again, you have to be vigilant. You've got to understand that both things can happen. So I trimmed a bunch. I might have sold 20 or 30% of it, but when it started coming back up, I added right back in.
Yeah.
And again, this didn't happen overnight. This one took, I was in it for 18 months. And so there was a lot of selling a little bit when it got really excessively high, adding back in. But it was my biggest gainer ever. I mean, I think I made really, it was like $29 million on it, I think. So my fund crushed it.
Yeah.
But knowing your fundamentals intimately and having a blockbuster story, not just an okay story, but like one of the best you've ever heard, and then sitting for the distance, knowing the average winning stock, like the longest winner in history was Waste Management. I think it went up 222 weeks. But the average is about 95, 98 weeks. And if you're going to catch these monsters, you're going to have to sit through many pullbacks to the 50-day. And you're going to probably have a couple earnings misses along, or maybe one miss. But when you understand the fundamentals, it gives you the fortitude to stay with it.
And you have to sit through a number. Yeah. And as you said, you have to sit through a number of these earnings reports. And the big winners, or when they're in that great run, they're going to have good reports one after the other. There might be one after a few of them where they're going to get hit and test you. But at that point, you already have a low cost basis. Hopefully you're up a decent amount that you could ride through that.
Yeah, the cockroach theory prevails in most leaders where they beat, they beat, they beat, and that's, you have to sit, you have to know history. You have to know history of the leaders, history of the market. And once you have that and you have some confidence, you'll be much more likely to sit.
So let's talk about SanDisk. And now this was a stock that came up on your screen, mm-hmm. your volume up screen, and let's go over this story. Now these guys have been acquired, right? They're no longer.
Yes, way down the road they were, but
yeah.
I'd known SanDisk because it had just been a semiconductor company for a long time, and I thought it was a semiconductor company. But I'd recently had my second child, and this is 2003, I think, and. So you have to come to the office early and you have to run your volume screen. And I look and there's this stock, it's SanDisk and it's up. I think average daily volume was somewhere around a million five a day. That day it traded 23 million shares, I think.
Wow.
So it wasn't just a gap up on a massive earnings. I mean, and again, I'm going to overstate the case, but say they were supposed to earn 7 cents. That day they earned like 21. It was a crushing beat. So I buy this in every account I'm managing. I mean, I load up. It's a little bit of a misnomer. I bought it for everybody.
Yeah.
But right on the second I saw that, I bought it across the board for a half a position for everybody. And about an hour later, my wife calls, and I'm like, "What are you doing?" She's like, "Oh, you know, we've got that digital camera." I'm like, "Yeah." She's like, "Can you believe it'll only hold 5 pictures? You have to buy this thing called a memory stick, and it's made by SanDisk." And I'm like, little do you know, I just put half your IRA in this thing. And I'm like, I heard that, and I'm like, oh my God, now I have the fundamentals and the earnings beat and the volume. And as the day progressed, it was like every other hour, I added. And the thing, SanDisk closed at the dead high. And it went on a run of many months, and it... At one point, after it was up significantly, I was very lucky. I mean, it was really luck. It was super extended over the 50. And I said, you know, this thing's going to pull back to the 50. It'll probably take a couple weeks to get there, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. So I leaked out about 30% of the whole position across the board. And to my surprise, about a week later, SanDisk dove to the 50-day in about 2 days or more. And when it broke the 50, it broke it so violently, I just let all of it rip because it was such a big gain for me. But the story again is fundamentals. If you have children, this is Peter Lynch, follow your daughters around the shopping mall. I mean, I call my wife the procurement department. So, you know, whatever you need, Leo gets. She just goes out and gets whatever we need. So she's follow your wife, follow those kids, get the fundamentals. And when you realize there's a revolution in photography that has to have a memory stick, and SanDisk is the leader, and they blew earnings up by 300% above estimates.
Yeah,
it's the fundamentals. Bill would say, "I'm more of a fundamentalist than a technical chartist," and I think people got very confused with that because he'd get so excited about charts,
right.
He would speak more about the reversal or the whatever, and he overstated maybe the case. Bill, you're the greatest, but
yeah. Yeah. Now also talk about, you know, being impulsive, right? And acting. Mm-hmm. So SanDisk was up huge on that day and you didn't really hesitate. You started buying at that time. And sometimes sometimes you have to do that, right? Especially if it's after an earnings report, they're blowing out they're completely blowing away expectations and there's a great story there. And sometimes you just have to go over after it, kind of like a Dexcom. It's a more recent example of that.
It's if you don't understand exactly what it looks like through a lot of experience, you can make a lot of dumb purchases.
Right.
And sometimes even really good ones are going to reverse. You have to be ready for them to reverse. But it's being impulsive is a double-edged sword. You slow and determined, waiting for that perfect pitch. Like I said, overtrading is the death knell for so many people. You should only be buying a couple times a year on great cups and handles. How often do they form? You've got to have a correction.
Yeah.
But then there's those rare occurrences when you just have got, you see it, you line it all up, and you have to make a decision right now. And it sometimes in the first 30 minutes. But then you don't plunge. You take half your position, and as the day progresses, you add, just keep adding and adding and adding. And if it closes at the dead high, and the volumes, you know, it's supposed to trade 1.5 million and it trades 23 million shares.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, that was clearly some whales, and their analysts are doing very good work.
Yes.
So all you have to do is follow those whales, and they're really doing the research first. I would say half the stocks that I've had good success with were gap ups on earnings. I mean, it's scary. Maybe the volume wasn't 23 million shares. The stock, it closed up 23% on the day. Now, how many people are going to go, sure, I'll put a third of my account into that stock,
right,
up 23%?
Right.
That's scary.
It's very scary, yep. Okay, so let's take a quick break here, and we will be back in a second. Hey guys, if you really enjoy listening to the podcast every week, we'd love it if you could rate and review the show on iTunes. Your review and ratings really help out the show, and we would love to get your feedback. Thanks so much for listening. And we're back with this special episode, holiday version of Investing with IBD, War Stories with Jim Roepel. And so let's get into more stories. So now let's talk about disappointments and hype, because this is something that everyone can fall prey to, especially if they read some article and say that, you know, this new technology is the next great thing. And I think we all fell prey to this because it sounded so cool, but 3D printing.
3D printing, I honestly thought by this time in history that a third of the country would have a 3D printer in their house. I mean, I saw that products would be printed at point of use.
Yeah,
I saw so many uses for this. I was overwhelmed by the fundamentals, but I wasn't using the product, and I didn't understand that it was very, very complicated and complex, and the average person was never going to be able to program this thing. And so the hype around these, and the stocks did have
some... They did go on pretty good runs, still.
They had some good runs, but they just didn't follow through for the long term, and they... I would say almost all of them ended up going into the single digits. So I think the one that I really is the weed stocks. The hype around the weed stocks, it was so enormous.
Yeah.
And they just proved, look at them today. The tax loss selling is going to drive these things into the low single digits before New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Hype is, I got to tell you, I made one of the biggest bogeys of my life. I put some money in a cryptocurrency, I'll just tell you, it went from almost nothing to, in my own personal account, $3 million. And I didn't quite understand that it wasn't as durable as a concept, or they weren't as evolved in the process as I'd thought. So number one, when you have something like that, you have life-changing money. You need to take some of that off the table.
So you bought cryptos. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I have a crypto hedge fund also, besides stock fund.
Okay. Okay.
But when you have a gain like that, and the hype is just insane. Like, everyone is talking about it at the Christmas table.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving table, and then they reload at Christmas.
Yeah.
There's too much hype in it.
That's when Bitcoin was like about to hit 20,000,
peaking,
right?
Yeah. Right there.
Right. I remember. That was 2 years ago. I remember
and
that.
And I've seen people, there was a secretary when I was at Morgan Stanley who bought a tiny little stock, and it went to 27. It was maybe a dollar. And she didn't take any of it.
Yeah.
And it went to zero. I mean, I've seen this in my life. I know probably six instances where people had life-changing money where it went to zero. So you've got to take these things. And they invariably are on these junk little names. And it's all about the hype. And you just, if there's, like when Facebook came public,
mm-hmm.
when someone who knows nothing about the stock market's like, hey, should we buy Facebook?
Right.
No.
Right. Yeah. Or the weird thing about Facebook is you could actually get the pre-IPO shares of Facebook. That it was just kind of being, no, Ed, you want to, people are trying to get out of it at that point. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that where for such a big stock to come out that you could actually get, the normal person could go and get shares before the IPO.
And people weren't just getting what they asked for. They were getting all of what some people, I know a guy who got more.
Wow.
That's the death. And on the converse, the opposite side of that, when you're in a bear market, if a stock can go public, that is of the very, very highest quality. Now, the market may be in a wicked downtrend, but when they launch a deal in a bear, or you absolutely have got, that's value. That's, or not, I don't know if it's a value stock, but it's valuable information. That some of the biggest winners were launched in bears. So the opposite of hype.
Yeah.
If they can get people to pony up their cash when they're getting mauled, there's something special there.
So let's end with one more story here, and this is Eve. And Eve is a shopper, right? She's part of your team.
Yes.
And she's a shopper, and she's managing money, and she's really into the system, and she's here a lot of times at the master's program. But she goes out and tries a lot of these products to really understand them. Talk about that.
No matter the price, like a Tesla is not out of range for a market research.
Yeah.
Green Mountain Coffee.
Yeah, the Keurig machine.
She bought that. Yeah. She buys almost all of these. But one time, there was this Chinese, I think it was a software security stock. And we're looking at it. And so she goes, she didn't even tell me. So she goes on the website. And this stock had all the variables. It looked great. I do think it might not have had institutional sponsorship. But everything seemed to be in place. So she goes on the website. And she calls me the next day. And she's like, Jim, I couldn't make it work. She's like, I'm not even sure this is a real company. She's like, there's something wrong. Well, the stock proceeded to do pretty well. And the next thing I come into my office like a month or two later, and it's halted. It never, I think it never reopened. It was a fraud.
Oh my God.
So having a shopper, like she's a varsity player,
yeah.
go and use those products. And if you can, using the products, knowing what people are buying in mass, kind of surveying people. Like, I just talked to a lot of people very recently. What do you want for Christmas? And several people said, you know, I'm investing in my house. I'm not buying a new one. And I thought, Restoration Hardware.
Yeah.
And it just kind of had a nice gap up, and it was sitting, it came down to the 50, but it never broke it. And it just sat there saying, I'm doing something special, buy me. And so I had the knowledge of what people were, you know, it's kind of a, it's anecdotal. It's not hardcore research,
right.
But it's valuable, very valuable.
Yeah, a lot of times you'll stumble onto a great idea if you just kind of keep your eyes and ears open. I mean, that's how I stumbled on Tesla years ago. I just saw the car. It was right near where the master's program is. It's on 3rd Street Promenade right there. They had a shop, and I was like, I've never seen a car as amazing as this, and it's $90,000, and they're selling out of it left and right.
They can't make them fast enough.
Right.
And there's all these haters, and now it's like the truck is better than any other truck out there, and there's people saying, a well-known hedge fund manager came out and said, I doubt it will ever be produced. We're talking about possibly the Thomas Edison of our time here.
Okay? Yeah.
He's proved the haters wrong over and over and over with PayPal, with SpaceX, the whole thing.
Yep.
And if you drive one of these, I've driven a couple of them, you talk to these owners, they love these cars.
Yeah.
So now there's a time to be in it, and then there's a time to let it digest. Right now is a time to be in it. I would have actually liked to have talked about Tesla. It's current.
Talk about it right now.
Well, it had a monster earnings beat. It has, excuse me one second.
Yep, so I had a big beat back in October on October 24th and had a massive gap up, 17% at that point. And it's right near new highs now. It's slowly just kind of grinding higher and right near new highs.
They beat by 542%. The volume signature has been really good. It had a little digestion. It's running up. The estimates, they're expected to make 540 next year. The up to down volume is 1.6. Now, here's the beauty. The group strength is number six. Ferrari is in here.
That's right.
Now, what does that say about the current economy when Ferraris, like they can't.
Really good point.
Well,
yeah.
I guess people are making some money right now.
Yeah.
And this stock just acts great. Now, I think like 25% of this float is short. If this makes a new high, this is going to be a very, very bad day for the shorts.
Right.
Tilray was a short squeeze. Now, that's a very different situation. That was an illiquid stock. But Teladoc, I don't want to overstate the case, but Teladoc might be like 35% short.
Yeah.
And it is acting pretty well. Tesla has a lot of the variables I look for. It's a revolutionary product. And you tell me, show me a Tesla owner who doesn't like it. Okay. Then I might, I still won't sell it because most people do.
Yeah.
Tesla looks, would have been an, I own Tesla right now. Eve owns Tesla. Eve is a pro shopper. I mean, who is so dutiful that she's willing to spend that kind of money?
That's true.
To do market research.
That's true. And with Tesla, with these all the owners there, I've seen on the internet, they get together. They have like Tesla events like at places. It's pretty remarkable. It's kind of like a club.
Yeah. I think European auto manufacturers came out and said, we're not going to design internal combustion engine cars anymore.
Wow.
I think I was just in China. It's stunning how the mass of humanity, it's quiet. They're all on electric scooters, and a significant amount of the cars, there's no engine noise. The noise you hear is the rubber on the road, the whirring.
Oh, that's wild.
There's no question. It's more efficient. It's just a wildly superior product. So shorts, Merry Christmas.
and so let's end this bonus episode of Investing with IBD War Stories with Jim Ropel. Jim, thanks for taking extra time to share more stories with us. It's been very valuable.
My pleasure. I just want to say, you know, optimists prevail. Never, ever, ever give up your time and dutiful attention to it, but never give up your edge. Never sacrifice with lower quality. And just, if I can do this, anybody can do this. So Merry Christmas.
Well said. Thanks everybody, and thanks for listening. And for this week's notes and charts, make sure to go to investors.com/podcast, where you'll find details for each episode in the podcast episode section. And make sure to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast if you haven't already. We'd really appreciate it. You can also send us your questions and comments to investingpodcast@investors.com. We would love to hear from you and may use your comments on an upcoming episode. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, and nothing should be construed as a recommendation to buy, hold, or sell any securities. Make sure to consider consulting with your financial advisor before making any investment decisions.